Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Arapahoe County News, read by Tim Elliott. This is being recorded on May 4th, 2024. Today, we will be reading the following main articles. Additional charges filed against Littleton school aide shown hitting autistic boy. By Colleen Slevin, Associated Press. Community College of Aurora restarts police education with APD cadet program. By Max Levy, Sentinel, Colorado staff writer. Airport noise lead legislation clears first hurdle. By Monty Whaley. Littleton's Farmers Market on first, third Sundays opens May 5th. By Nina Joss. Littleton Conference was a chance to learn from, be inspired by women leaders. Also by Nina Joss. When elementary schools consolidated, Littleton Public Schools pivoted to create the East Community Center. Also by Nina Joss. And following up with miscellaneous articles. Additional charges filed against Littleton school aide showing hitting autistic boy. A Littleton school bus aide shown on surveillance video hitting a nonverbal autistic boy has been charged with 10 more counts of abuse involving two children, prosecutors said Friday. Kira Jones, 29, was arrested last month and initially charged with one felony count of third-degree assault on an at-risk person. Eight additional charges of third-degree assault on an at-risk person and two misdemeanor counts of child abuse have been filed against her, Eric Ross, a spokesperson for 18th Judicial District Attorney John Kellner, said. The new charges involved alleged abuse of the child originally named as a victim and a second child, he said. Jones is represented by lawyers from the Public Defender's Office, which does not comment to the media on its cases. The names of the victims were redacted in court documents, but Qusair Mohammed Bai, a lawyer who represents the families of students who took the bus Jones worked on in Littleton, said they are both nonverbal autistic boys, including a 10-year-old shown being hit in a video released by his mother last month. At the time, Jessica Vestal said her son came home from school with unexplained bruises all over his body in January. Later, he got a black eye, which Vestal said Jones blamed on him hitting himself with a toy. And later, he suffered a bruised foot. Unable to explain the source of the injuries, Vestal asked the school district to review the surveillance video. Each of the new assault charges, which are felonies, represents a day in which there are multiple separate incidents of abuse against the children, Mohammed Bai said. Community College of Aurora restarts police education with APD cadet program. A path for Aurora students to become police officers is once again taking shape at Community College of Aurora. As the school plans to welcome up to 20 cadets who would be fast-tracked into a career with the city's police department. Starting this fall, the school's partnership with the Aurora Police Department would allow cadets to earn an associate's degree of their choice while participating in a two-year apprenticeship with APD that would include a handful of days each month accompanying and learning from officers. Cadets will also take part in a week-long boot camp and work in a non-sworn capacity for the city, for example, helping to manage parking at events, according to Bobby Pace, Vice President of Academic Success at Community College of Aurora. The program will cover the cost of cadet schooling if they go on to work for at least 3 years at APD. Pace said the 4 semesters of tuition and books, worth about $12,000, will be paid for using donations and contributions from the Aurora Police Association Charitable Foundation, as well as by the college itself. The selling point for us was that it ensures the programming we provide directly does lead to economic and social mobility for the students within Aurora, Pace said. Students are truly going to get a free education with a direct pipeline to be able to serve the community. Cadets who complete the program and are unable or do not want to continue down the path of becoming a police officer may also choose to work for the City of Aurora for 3 years to have their schooling paid for. Community College of Aurora was home to its own police academy last year when it was allowed to sunset amid a decline in enrollment as more departments in the Denver metro area ramped up their own in-house academies, according to Pace. Police spokesman Joe Moyland said the idea for the new partnership developed in 2022 under former interim chief Dan Oates, who Pace said was familiar with similar programs that served as pipelines for the New York Police Department. While both the college and police department hope to open up career paths in Aurora for Aurorians, undertaking recruitment in such a way that the city's sworn officer force more closely resembles the community as a whole is one of the specific goals of APD's reform agreement with the Colorado Attorney General's office. We have heard from community members that, in addition to seeing themselves reflected in the officers who serve Aurora, they want the department to be composed of more homegrown officers, Moyland said in an email. We also recognize that the student bodies of community colleges tend to be made up of people who grew up and live in the community. We think people who grew up, live, and understand Aurora provide unique advantages to serving the community. Since the reform agreement was signed, APD has introduced efforts like the 30x30 initiative, pledging to raise the portion of women in recruit classes to at least 30% by 2030, and stepped up community outreach to encourage women and people of color, both historically unrepresented among Aurora police officers, to apply. Recruitment is one area of the agreement where APD is asking visible progress. Earlier this year, the department reported that the three classes completing academic training represented the largest group of recruits to progress through the academy at once since at least 2020. Demographically, the group was closer to the makeup of the community as a whole. Moylan and Pace also called attention to the fact that one of the requirements for promotion to higher ranks within the department is education beyond high school, meaning the cadet program has the potential to train the next generation of leaders within APD. You must have, at minimum, an associate's degree to promote to supervisory positions in the department, Moyland said. By helping cadets earn their degree, we are laying the foundation for them to have a long and successful career in law enforcement, as well as attracting the future leaders of APD. Cadet candidates must be at least 18, are expected to maintain a grade point average of 2.5 or higher for the duration of the program, and can't have earned more than 12 college credit hours previously. They also can't have been convicted of a felony or any other crime that would prevent them from being certified by the Colorado Peace Officer Standards and Training Board. Moyland said cadets will be pre-screened before entering the program and undergo the department's full background investigation and screening process before they are formally offered a job. Applicants are being accepted until June 6th for the first cadet class, which will begin August 19 and start training with Aurora Police August 23rd. Information about the program and application process is available at buff.ly/3QOCSCM. It has really become an opportunity for us to have a great pipeline for students who are interested in law enforcement and want to work here in the community and stay in Aurora, Pace said. Aurora dentist accused of killing wife tried to plant letters suggesting she was suicidal by the Associated Press. An Aurora dentist accused of killing his wife by putting poison in her protein shakes asked a fellow jail inmate to plant letters to make it look like his wife was suicidal, police say. James Craig asked the inmate to put the letters in Craig's garage and truck at his home, Aurora Police Detective Bobby Olson testified Wednesday, at a court hearing on the new allegation against Craig, KMGH-TV reported. The inmate believed the letters were written by Craig but meant to appear as if his wife, Angela Craig, had written them, said Olson, the lead detective in the case. Angela Craig, a 43-year-old mother of six who was married to her husband for 23 years, died in March 2023 of poisoning from cyanide and tetrahydrazoline, the latter a substance found in over-the-counter eye drops, according to the coroner. Craig is alleged to have bought poisons online just before his wife began to experience symptoms that doctors could not find a cause for, but his lawyers have argued there is no direct evidence that he put poison in his wife's shakes and have accused Olson of being biased against him. According to Olson, Craig offered money to pay for the bond for the inmate to be released from jail or perform free dental work in exchange for planting the letters, but the inmate decided not to take him up on the offer, the detective testified. The inmate instead contacted law enforcement, she said. The defense argued that the inmate was not a credible witness. One of Craig's lawyers, Andrew Ho, pointed out that the inmate only contacted authorities after an initial hearing to review the evidence in the case last summer, which was widely covered by the media, and that the inmate could not accurately identify the color of Craig's truck. However, a judge agreed prosecutors had presented enough evidence for Craig to also be tried on the new charge involving the inmate, filed last month, of solicitation to commit tampering with physical evidence. The inmate's name was redacted from the document. Craig was already charged with first-degree murder and another count of solicitation to commit tampering with physical evidence. He pleaded not guilty to those two charges in November 2023. Craig is scheduled to face trial on August 8th. Arapaho County hosting Emerald Ash Borer Info Session after Littleton Sighting by Max Levy, Sentinel, Colorado staff writer. Forestry experts will equip Arapaho County residents with facts about the iridescent green beetle besieging Colorado ash trees May 2nd, close to a year after the county's first emerald ash borer sighting in Littleton. Emerald ash borers lay their eggs on the outside of ash trees, causing trees to die over time as the immature insects eat their way through the wood beneath the bark. Once the larvae mature and exit the trees, they leave behind tiny D-shaped holes that are one sign of infestation, along with thinning tree canopies and patchy bark beneath which the serpentine tunnels left by the insects may be visible. The emerald ash borer has killed tens of millions of ash trees in the United States since it was accidentally imported from Asia in the 1990s, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. In 2013, Colorado arborists spotted the beetle for the first time in Boulder. More than a decade later, the bugs continue to pose a threat to urban forests across the state, including Aurora's, where the city estimates there are about 110,000 vulnerable trees. City spokesman Michael Brannon wrote in an email that the city is continuing to follow its plan for inspecting and treating the 5,776 ash trees growing on public land. The bug has yet to be sighted in Aurora. Communities as close as Westminster and Littleton haven't been as fortunate. As far as the public trees, EAB will be impactful but manageable, Brannon said. As for the wider urban forest, the City of Aurora Forestry Department has been proactive in communicating to council about this issue for the last 5 years and will keep the city informed as events unfold. Aurora residents are prohibited from planting new ash trees because of the threat, and the city has published a list of alternatives that also fare well in Aurora's semi-arid prairie climate. The May 2nd virtual meeting hosted by Arapaho County will bring together experts from CSU Extension and the City of Littleton, who will talk about recognizing ash trees and signs of beetle infestation. Interested members of the public can register for the meeting, which is scheduled to last from 6 to 7 p.m. at col.st/Z2GUN. More information about how local governments are responding to the emerald ash borer threat is available at arapahoco.gov/EAB. Airport noise lead legislation clears first hurdle. HB24-1235 would set up incentives to switch aircraft from lead fuel to unleaded. A potential new law that proposes to cut airplane noise and lead pollution at Colorado's smallest airports cleared its first big hurdle at the state legislature. The bill, HB24-1235, was scheduled to be heard April 23rd before the state Senate Finance Committee. The legislation would help aircraft owners phase out lead fuel and ensure Colorado's living near smaller commuter airports are represented on the Colorado Aeronautical Board, said Rep. Shannon Bird, sponsor of HB24-1235. As our state's population grows, smaller airports are seeing more traffic than ever before, which means increased noise and air pollution in our communities, said Bird via a news release. There are no safe levels of lead exposure for our children, and this bill works to clean up our air while prioritizing the health of our neighbors. The bill passed the state house last week by a 43-18 margin. Residents who live near the airports, including Centennial Airport in Arapaho County and Rocky Mountain Metropolitan Airport in Broomfield, are lobbying heavily for the bill's passage. Those residents say that lead fuel used by piston-powered aircraft taking off and landing at those small airports is being dropped over their houses while incessant noise from flight operations is causing health problems. Supporters of the airport say they are working with residents to answer concerns over noise and that it takes time to convert to unleaded fuel in aircraft. Quiet Skies Over Arapaho County, a group of airport critics, is asking for a big turnout to speak out in favor of HB24-1235. This is our best chance to be heard, and a strong showing from our side will be important, as we're sure the opposition will be well represented, stated as Quiet Skies Over Arapaho County email. Quiet Skies is also asking supporters to sign a petition to force local officials to take legal action to curtail touch-and-go operations at Centennial Airport. Superior and Boulder County have sued Jefferson County to prompt Rocky Mountain Regional Airport to scale back its operations as well. Specifically, according to the news release, HB24-1235 would incentivize aircraft owners to transition their planes from using fuel containing lead to unleaded fuel by providing a refundable income tax credit for qualified expenses. Ensure that at least 10% of all state aviation system grant funding, or $1.5 million annually, goes toward the transition to unleaded aviation gasoline. It would also require grant receipts to adopt a plan to phase out the sales of leaded gasoline in 2030 and to enforce a noise abatement plan. Add to residents of communities affected by aviation as members to the Colorado Aeronautical Board requires the Division of Aeronautics to work with the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment to evaluate, educate, and provide technical assistance to airports regarding the impacts of aircraft noise and leaded aviation fuel. Littleton Farmers Market on 1st, 3rd Sundays opens May 5th. Downtown Littleton is joining other Denver areas with a weekend farmers market, offering fresh local food, music, and a chance to bump into neighbors. The market will take place on South Nevada Street, just north of Main Street, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., twice a month on the first and third Sundays starting May 5th. Two Littleton residents joined forces to start the event. They hope to build an inclusive community, support small businesses, and create more equitable access to fresh food. I'm excited to see people build connections with vendors and neighbors in a really tangible way, and then start to see our city as something that can be a little bit more for everybody, said Keeley Quinn, who works in communications and founded the event on the side. In the past, Quinn ran a baking business and used to sell her goods at farmers markets. The farmers market is an initiative of a nonprofit Quinn recently started, Littleton Q Plus. It focuses on highlighting Littleton's diversity, including through LGBTQ Plus focused events, small business events, and others. Quinn connected with Tiffany Norton, who owns Juniper Seed Mercantile, a substantial personal care product and refill store in Littleton. The two brainstormed ideas for inclusive local events. Norton, who has been a vendor at farmers markets for about 5 years, thought downtown Littleton would be a good place for one. The two are also involved in the citizens group Vibrant Littleton, which Quinn said supports the idea of a farmers market. Although there is an existing farmers market on Wednesdays in Aspen Grove, Quinn and Norton wanted a weekend market to give more working residents the option to visit. Littleton joins more than a score of communities in the Front Range with active farmers markets. Quinn said having one closer to home would give the opportunity for many Littleton residents to walk and bike there. Littleton's vendors include Elson Farms, Golden Sourdough, Littleton Meats, Meat Sweets, Fox Fungi, Sensili, Rocking HC Eggs, Grand Valley Country Market, Lenny Bell Honey LLC, Moonlit Vitch, On the Fence Kombucha. Quinn said they decided to focus the market on food instead of handicrafts in order to reduce competition with storefronts downtown. They hope for the market to bring more customers to local businesses. We want to help infuse more business into the existing businesses that are in the area, she said. There will be no food trucks at the market, so people are encouraged to dine downtown, Quinn said. Ciccarelli Taqueria, a restaurant on Main Street, will have a booth offering breakfast burritos. To support Littleton businesses, Quinn said she and Norton will waive the $50 season registration fee for Littleton merchants to host booths at the market. Littleton Q Plus asks vendors to pay 10% of their sales from each event to help support the organization, but offers flexibility. If vendors feel comfortable paying more or less to maintain their margins, Quinn and Norton are happy to discuss other options. A bluegrass band will perform at the market. A free community yoga class is also planned for the first hour of each event. Quinn said the market, at its core, is about community and supporting small local businesses. Gathering in a small area for limited hours on a specific day gives people the opportunity to run into their neighbors, she said. These organic connections can help bridge social gaps. She said she is excited to support local farmers and food producers who are working hard to earn a living and hopes the market can give people a chance to eat fresher foods. Bringing fresh produce into a more central location helps to create some equity, Quinn said. Littleton is not a food dessert by any means, but having an additional touch point of access, I think, is really great. WW2 Historical Group Robbed of Wartime Artifacts by Elizabeth Slay. An organization that collects World War II memorabilia and preserves the history of soldiers is seeking help after its equipment trailer was stolen in Englewood. David Little, president of the 10th Mountain Division Living History Group, has launched a GoFundMe in an effort to replace some of the equipment taken on April 13th in the 4200 block of South Logan Street. Little said the trailer was stolen from the home of a member of the organization who was doing repairs on the trailer. We were going to apply a graphics package when he was done with the repairs, Little said. Two people pulled up at about 1 a.m. and a Chevy or a GMC pickup in front of the house, cut the locks, hooked the trailer, and left. A very quick turnaround. Little said several historic U.S. military items were in the trailer, including tents, cooking equipment, cots, footlockers, and more. The equipment in this trailer is used in museum exhibits around the country, including National Archives, History Colorado, Broomfield Veterans Museum, and in public displays like the 40s ball, Little said. Thankfully, some of the most valued items are on exhibit with both History Colorado and Broomfield Veterans Museum at this time. Since the theft, Little said the Highlands Ranch-based organizations has looked in the area to try and recover any of the items. He said the group has notified surplus stores and possible dealers across the region to look for these items. Our hope is to recover the artifacts. The modern stuff can be all replaced, he said. 10th Mountain Division Living History Display Group, Inc., is a nonprofit that has been around for more than 40 years. Using original artifacts, the members wear original uniforms and equipment to teach folks about the history of these soldiers who trained near Vail and Leadville at Camp Hale 9, Little said. The unit doesn't operate on public support but donations and the members' own contributions. Little said the organization hopes to recover the artifacts as they are irreplaceable. These bits of history may be gone for good, Little said. This loss may slow down and alter some of our planned exhibits for this summer and ball until we can rebuild. The Inglewood Police Department didn't provide details of the theft, saying the crime remains under investigation, but it encourages anyone with information to call the non-emergency number at 303-761-7410. Former Disney Princess Brings Music to Inglewood Classroom, by Elizabeth Slay. In the realm of Charles Hay World Elementary School, former Disney princess-turned-second-grade teacher Alyssa Mertens utilizes song and creativity to captivate her students. With a passion for imagination and relationship building, Mertens embodies her Disney-honed skills and knowledge from a master's degree in curriculum and instruction to create a fun and safe classroom experience, all the while weaving tales of knowledge and wonder that leave her students eager to learn. I just love bringing the theatrics of that into my classroom, Mertens said. I would say for almost every type of subject, there is some type of song we're singing. Mertens received her theatrical skills in college while working as a character actress and dressing up as various Disney princesses for parties and events. She applies those talents to her teaching style as they provide her with a unique approach to education. Another important element of her teaching philosophy is the management piece. You need to have strong management and relationships with your students in order to teach anything, Mertens said. That is the foundation to everything, and it's a part of my philosophy. It's her management skills which help with what she considers the most challenging aspect of teaching, multitasking. It almost feels like I am a performer in a circus to juggle all the things teachers do, Mertens said. Originally from Pittsburgh, Mertens joined Inglewood Schools 5 years ago. She said she found her position while job searching in the middle of the school year. I stumbled across Charles Hay, and it was the best stumble I've ever taken in my life, Mertens said. It just kind of landed in my lap, and I've been so happy ever since. Mertens is the youngest of five and said it wasn't until college that she decided she wanted to be a teacher. My sister started having children, and I loved working with children, Mertens said. The more I worked with kids, I fell in love with teaching and the thought of being a teacher. Mertens said she is more interested in teaching the primary years of kindergarten through second grade because she loves the innocence of children. I love their curious minds and the stuff they come up with, Mertens said. They're so unfiltered in what they say, and that just brings me just so much joy in their pureness. Mertens in particular loves teaching second grade because she feels like she can talk to the students and form deeper connections. They're able to understand a little bit more and build onto our conversations, Mertens said. It's important to Mertens that students feel safe and secure in her classroom so they can learn to their full potential. I hug them every morning coming in, Mertens said. I greet them, say good morning, look them in the eyes as we go around in a circle, and that's the part that I love the most. It's fun to adapt to each type of student with their own unique ways. There are many aspects Mertens enjoys about the Englewood District, including its smaller size, the people she works with, and the amount of resources available. I am really big on contentment and just finding a place where I thrive in and belong in and staying, Mertens said. Englewood's given that to me. Additionally, Mertens feels she has a voice despite being at the beginning stages of her career. People want to hear my opinions, and I just feel accepted by my peers, Mertens said. Going forward, Mertens hopes to one day live in Englewood as she commutes from Thornton, and she hopes to be a steady figure for the community. I would just love to become established in a place, hopefully Englewood, for my whole career, Mertens said. I would love to see my kids at the supermarket or on walks. That's just what I've always wanted. Littleton Conference was a chance to learn from, be inspired by, women leaders. At a recent event, over 100 people gathered to listen, learn, collaborate, and find inspiration from the stories of women leaders. It was the Littleton Business Chamber's first women's leadership conference, drawing in women and men from a range of industries. Our goal was to be there to share inspiring stories, to have people share what brought them down and how they persevered and succeeded, said Chamber Executive Director Corey Lundock. I think everybody can learn from all of those stories. Attendees listened to speakers with leadership experience in medicine, entrepreneurship, local government, and education, and had opportunities to network with each other. Dr. Melissa Levack, the Advent Health Rocky Mountain Regional Director of Cardiac Surgery, spoke about her career path and work-life balance in a keynote address. Levack had performed 2 heart valve procedures before the address and then left to perform 1 more surgery before the end of the day, according to Lundock. Her story resonated with so many, as there were several times she wanted to quit her studies, but her passion and work ethic kept her going, Lundock said. 2 chamber board members paid for a group of students and staff from Littleton Public Schools' Explorative Pathways for Innovative Careers, EPIC, campus to attend. EPIC students explore career pathways including business, construction, trades, and health science. It's an honor, especially as a student, to have the opportunity to be able to have this experience, one student wrote on a feedback form after the conference. Being able to hear about the lives and experiences of leaders and their takeaways was wonderful. Rhonda Shea, a 2-time cancer survivor and entrepreneur, shared advice on overcoming life's obstacles. On a panel, Littleton City Council member Gretchen Ryden, Arapahoe County Commissioner Carrie Warren Gully, and Littleton Public Schools Board of Education member Sherry Garcia Cooper shared their stories. Ryden told the audience how her experiences volunteering at a women's homeless shelter, performing music at a nursing home, and mentoring a child in foster care helped her find her career passions. Those early community service experiences helped me zone in on my passions and strengths, grew my confidence as a community leader, and ultimately led me to a career in social work, she wrote in an email to the Littleton Independent. The chamber also honored Dr. Stephanie Fuji, president of Arapahoe Community College, with the Outstanding Community Leader Award. During her tenure, the college has emerged as a leader in the community, driving social, economic, and cultural progress while empowering individuals to achieve their education and professional goals, Lundock said. We love how she and her team are at many Littleton events and truly want to be a part of this community. Lundock emphasized that although the event focused on the leadership of women, men were in the audience too. Littleton City Manager Jim Blecklenburg was one of them. I was pleased to attend and support all of the strong women leaders from our organization and celebrate strong leadership more broadly in our community, he said. It is every leader's responsibility to foster inclusion in leadership ranks, as this is the only way to ensure the strongest relationship teams possible for our community. Lundock said the Chamber's Women in Leadership Littleton Committee, which organized the event, plans to host the conference annually. Everybody has struggles they have to go through, and they learn them, and they move forward and they get better, she said. If everybody walked away with one little nugget of inspiration, that makes me happy. When elementary schools consolidated, Littleton Public Schools pivoted to create the East Community Center. Inside a building on South Fairfield Street in Littleton, classrooms line the hallways. It's not exactly a school, but kids and adults may study here. In one classroom, there's a cycling class. In another, a substance misuse recovery program. Spanish words and guitar strumming echo out from other rooms and down the hall. People pursue produce in a market area. Formerly East Elementary School, the building is now East Community Center, a public gathering place that hosts and supports local organizations that work to serve and enrich the community. The center is looking to become a one-stop resource hub, said Jose Cardenas, the center's director. We can offer resources and programming in one space that hopefully can meet the needs of the community members, all under one roof, in one location. The center opened its doors in the fall of 2023, about 2 years after the Littleton Public Schools Board of Education decided to consolidate two elementary schools, leaving the building empty. East Elementary and Ralph Moody Elementary merged into a separate new campus, Little Raven Elementary. The district then initiated a community engagement process to determine what kinds of programming neighbors wanted to see in the empty building. The resulting center now hosts 15 organizations and collaborates with more to provide after-school and youth programs, a food bank, educational classes, wellness services, and more. In addition to music classes, leadership programs, and tutoring, Cardenas said the center is working with the YMCA to host youth camps and sports this summer. In the future, there will also be classes for kids to learn how to use technology to produce audio and videos. The facility also hosts organizations that help adults. We offer mental health services for our Littleton Public Schools staff members here, Cardenas said. We have Arapaho Douglas Works in the building to help with job readiness and job search opportunities. Organizations pay rent for their spaces in the center, Cardenas said, adding that the district offers flexibility in rents since many groups are nonprofits. The idea is to kind of fill up the space with programming, Cardenas said. We don't want to price them out from being in here. Seeing the groups develop relationships and collaborate has been fulfilling, he added. It's been very natural for these partners because they know of each other in one form or another, he said. To have them all under one space and kind of watch these partners settle and develop their programming and then kind of work with each other to provide those services has been the best part of this so far. The center has a market-style food bank hosted by St. Andrew's United Methodist Church, where families can shop for free food, diapers, and hygiene items on Thursdays. It also partners with Break Bread, which offers freshly cooked to-go meals at the center on Wednesdays. The building is located in a primary immigrant Spanish-speaking neighborhood, according to a district report. Cardenas said the center serves many families who speak Spanish and English and works to make information accessible in both languages. The center has also started working with a group called Ukrainians of Colorado, which Cardenas said will likely soon expand the center's work to three languages. The city of Littleton provided $340,000 in grants to help pay for the management of the center, and the Littleton Public Schools Foundation provided $30,000 to support the community engagement process before the transition, District Communications Director Diane Leiker said. The district provides the maintenance, security, and communication systems for the facility. The center's classroom spaces are now all occupied, Cardenas said. But the center is adapting other spaces to be able to partner with more organizations. We're trying to be very creative in terms of the layout of our spaces and even looking into shared spaces, he said. We don't want to turn down anybody because we know they're here to help the community. Cardenas said many families have emphasized how important the school and its building were to the community, and they wanted that spirit to continue in whatever came next. I think that's kind of why people fought so hard for it to be turned into a community center, he said. He said the center has more ideas for programs it wants to explore, such as English as a second language classes. He hopes his team can keep the momentum going to find fitting partners and serve as many community members as possible. A calendar of programming, including food bank and class information, is available at https://littontpublicschools.net/ECC/calendar events. Our newsroom wants to know what matters to you this election year. Here's a bit of what we've heard so far by Megan Verlee and CCM staff. 1 month ago, newsrooms across the state, including ours, launched an ambitious project. Invite the people of Colorado to tell us what they want politicians to talk about in this election, and use their answers to help guide the stories we tell. So far, more than 3,100 people from around the state have responded to that call and filled out the Voter Voices survey. About 100 of the respondents are readers of Colorado Community Media's 24 metro area newspapers. Their integrity, work ethic, and vision for our country or the entity they will be representing, said Mindy Moore, a reader from Arvada. Moore listed democracy and good government as a top concern, with abortion and the economy, cost of living, as important issues as well. The Coloradans who filled out our survey so far make it clear they want politicians to discuss issues like the environment, housing affordability, immigration, health care, and education. In Walsh, on the southeastern plains, a shortage of health care workers is a driving concern for Rita Hetrick. She runs the long-term care facility in the town of roughly 540 people. Instead of drawing on a local workforce, she relies on pricey staffing agencies. We don't have a stream of cash that's just available when you're a small, rural facility, Hetrick told Voter Voices, that state and federal regulations exasperate the problem, and it's something she wants to see politicians tackle. Many have also written about their concerns for our democracy itself. I want candidates to discuss wholesale reform of our country's and Colorado's constitution, wrote Juan Manuel Ramirez Angeres of Denver. We need to overhaul them to incorporate reforms like more seats, instant runoff elections, robust publicly financed elections, and proportional representation. We're also asking how much confidence people have in elections, both how they are conducted in Colorado and around the country. The people responding so far are telling us they have great faith in our state's election system, but a lot more doubt about whether the election will be conducted fairly nationwide. The Voter Voices survey is being conducted by 60 newsrooms statewide from Fort Collins to Pueblo, Salida and Alamosa, and from Sterling and Kiowa to Grand Junction, Durango, and Nucla. As Regan Tuttle, owner and editor of the San Miguel Basin Forum, put it, "My community is very remote and rural. They tend to feel that nobody listens. I felt the survey would give them a chance to speak and feel heard." The project is led by the nonprofit Colorado News Collaborative, CoLab, and CPR. The survey will remain open through this year's election campaigning as newsrooms continue to record their community's priorities and present what we learn to our readers and listeners. The goal is not only to respond to what Coloradans statewide and locally say matters to them in our election reporting, but also to challenge candidates to respond directly to voters' priorities and concerns. We invite you not just to fill out the Voter Voices survey, but also to pass it on, share the link with others you know whose opinions we should hear. Colorado Community Media and its 24 newspapers across the Denver are participating. Holistic Help. Denver area organizations provide comprehensive services for people in need, by Joe Davis. Healthcare, affordable housing, food insecurity, homelessness, violence, and inflation are among the top issues facing Americans and Coloradans, according to a study by Pew Research Center. While the state and the country struggle to resolve these issues through legislation, nonprofits in the Denver metro area are attacking the issues using a holistic approach. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines holistic as a focus on the whole system, not a single part. A holistic approach to helping people means also helping with shelter, food, mental health, medical checks, employment, wellness, and more in addition to the problem that brought the person in for help. Several local organizations practice using a holistic approach to helping people. One model of this approach is the Porchlight Family Justice Center in Lakewood. The organization's work is described on its website as providing comprehensive legal, emotional, and critical supportive services for survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, child abuse, abuse of at-risk individuals, elder abuse, and human trafficking. Brandon Bowles, development manager for Porchlight, said the navigators are the Porchlight team members who help guide each person through the center. The organization partners with several government and nonprofit agencies to provide services to people and families in need. According to Bowles, these services can range from health checks at the in-house clinic, legal services, remote court appearances, therapy, housing, clothing, and even child care, among other things. The center has several services provided by partner agencies right there on location, so there is no need to leave the building for most things, Bowles added. We have 20 cubicles here for partners to use, Bowles said. So oftentimes we use the analogy that Porchlight is kind of like the mall. The stores in the mall are our partners in the services that are provided. He gave an example. Our medical services are provided through St. Anthony's Forensic Nursing Programs, Bowles explained. Our navigators are kind of like personal shoppers, so they're the ones that know what is on sale at all the stores, what's on discount. If you want to find a pair of orange shoes, they're going to tell you which store to go to. So that's kind of an easy way to think about it. Organizations like Porchlight believe that tackling all of a person's needs is the best way to help them. Pose Ryant, founder and director of the Apprentice of Peace Youth Organization of Denver, believes that forming relationships is at the heart of what makes the holistic approach work. I think we're more focused on the relationship with clients and really providing opportunities for the community to build their resilience, Ryant said. To find their support system, to create awareness around various wellness tools and or programs that are out there. And not only the ones we offer, but that are out there for people who may be struggling, who just need a friend. Ryant went on to say that helping his target demographic, the youth of the Denver metro area, requires providing services and a space for their families as well. AOPYO is not the only organization that provides services for the entire family. Gigi's Playhouse of Denver in Lakewood provides a space and services for kids and adults with Down syndrome. These services include education, fitness, wellness, occupational skills, support groups, and more. However, there is also programming that the family can use. The value that we're giving to these families is astronomical, said Leslie Klein, executive director of Gigi's Denver. It's not just in the fact that the services are free, but it's in helping the families and the person with Down syndrome move on that path towards a future of independence and a good quality of life, of enjoying life. These organizations and others believe that the benefits of the holistic approach is yielding results. For example, Gigi's Playhouse Denver volunteers have developed a cutting-edge fitness program, Gigi Fit, for kids with Down syndrome. According to Klain, the program is being used around the world. We have two physicians locally in Wheat Ridge. They co-designed Gigi Fit, Klain explained. It's about mobility, dexterity, flexibility, and its movement. Klain said the doctors designed the program to help Denver families at first. But then it became national, then international, Klain said. She said Gigi Fit classes are virtual, with participants from all over the world. AOPYO's best success stories come from the people who came back to help work at the company once their time with the program finished. As an example is Lex Cacciatore, the AOPYO communication support specialist. Cacciatore said she entered the program at a volatile time in her adolescence. The organization's approach helped her steer her to a better life. It's not just supportiveness, energy in the community, but the people of AOPYO, Cacciatore said. They've really supported me through a lot of things personally, academically, and in every aspect of my life. She said Ryan even checked in with her throughout college to provide the much-needed support and encouragement. Dr. C.G. Dai Laura, language specialist at AOPYO, said the center and Ryan helped her whole family. Dai Laura said that she first came to the program years ago to seek support for her daughter. The atmosphere that they create, the openness. A safe, it's so hard to find these places, especially for the youth, Dai Laura said. As a parent, my daughter also went through the program, and Pos Ryan was amazing for her. We had very hard personal difficulties at that time. Dai Laura said Ryan and the organization helped her whole family with wellness, mental health, academic support, and providing a community. Some other local organizations that provide holistic help include Marisol Homes of Denver is a women's shelter that runs a holistic program for clients. The program includes services and support in employment, housing, health care, mental health awareness, wellness, and more. Hope House of Colorado in Arvada calls its holistic approach self-sufficiency programming, used to help teen mothers in the Denver metro area. The organization provides wellness, education, career, social support, and more for teen mothers. The ARC of Colorado has locations all across the state and the U.S. It provides services and support for adults and kids with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. Additionally, ARC provides mental, career, education, and wellness services for their clients. Avi at Old Town in Arvada holds 30 apartments for former foster kids who have aged out of the system and are no longer eligible for services. CASA of Jefferson and Gilpin Counties partners with Foothills Regional Housing to create housing for 30 of the teens. The program also provides services in mentorship, wellness, and support with career and education. To find more organizations that offer a holistic approach to helping people, go to coloradogives.org and search the nonprofit organizations listed. Press release. Celebrate talent and creativity at Red Rocks Community College's Find Woodworking Exhibition by sponsored content. Join us for an exceptional celebration of craftsmanship and creativity at Red Rocks Community College's RRCC End of Semester Fine Woodworking Exhibition. Date, Saturday, May 11th, 2024. Time, noon to 2 p.m. Location, Construction Tech Building, RRC Lakewood Campus. This event is a showcase for the talented students of our fine woodworking program, featuring a stunning array of projects. From intricate furniture pieces to captivating sculptures, each creation reflects the dedication and passion of our students. Guests will have the opportunity to vote for their favorite pieces, highlighting outstanding talent within our program. Join us in celebrating the culmination of hard work and innovation. In addition to the captivating woodworking displays, attendees will enjoy complimentary refreshments, engaging conversations, and live entertainment. Admission is free and open to the public. Do not miss the chance to immerse yourself in the world of fine craftsmanship and innovation. For more information, please contact Sonne Shields at sonne.shields@rrcc.edu or 720-937-7321. We look forward to seeing you there. About Red Rocks Community College. Established in 1969, Red Rocks Community College delivers high-quality, affordable education programs leading to degrees or professional certificates. The college serves over 10,000 students per year online and at campus locations in Lakewood and Arvada. www.rrc.edu. Thank you for joining us for the Arapahoe County News. My name is Tim Elliott.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.